Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 352 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Time, your host, as usual. Today, my guest is Miriam Arrington Fisher, and Miriam is a law firm owner in the Richmond, Virginia area, who, interestingly and quite humbly to me, has been a longtime listener of The Law Entrepreneur and credits the program for helping her shape her practice as she was starting out as a solo practitioner in the criminal defense world while trying to raise initially one and now three children at the same time. And we're going to talk about that journey, how convoluted and complex that can be for working moms, and how in through that discovery, she came to author a book called Mom's a Lawyer, Start a Firm and Take Control of Your Life, which then also gave rise to a course called Law Firm Launch. And you can hear that whole span of development and growth from Miriam. And it's just quite literally fascinating to me. So without any further delay, here is Miriam Arrington Fisher. Miriam Arrington Fisher, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil.
Well, I am thrilled to have you with us today, Miriam. I understand that you've been a listener of the podcast for a while, which is humbling, and I thank you for that. So tell our audience a little bit about yourself, how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. Thank you. And yes, I have been a longtime listener, and it was very helpful in my own journey. When I first started practicing law, I started off in legal aid organization, and I quickly moved to a criminal defense firm. And I'm one of those people who I went to law school because I wanted to be a trial lawyer. I was inspired by courtroom dramas as a child, and that was what I had my sights set on. So I was very fortunate early in my career. I had some wonderful mentors, and I landed at a criminal defense firm in Richmond, Virginia, and working on exciting cases, trying cases, traveling all over the state, and was just really, really happy doing that. And after I've been practicing for several years, I became a mom, and it was a little bit of a transitional year for me. I had my first child, my daughter, and I got a divorce. And yeah, it was just a stressful time, you know, personally. And there's really nothing like that kind of life event to really kind of shake things up and made me really look at, you know, what I needed. And so, you know, backing up as an associate, I was just working around the clock and loving every minute of it. I was, you know, in court all day. I was doing jail visits at night. I was doing trial prep on the weekends. And
that pretty much describes a criminal defense attorney's life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right there.
I was, you know, everybody else around me was doing the same thing, and that was the gig. And maybe like many first time parents, I hadn't really thought too much ahead of time about how becoming a parent was going to impact that. And I had, you know, a vague idea that I would have childcare lined up and things like that. But when my daughter was born, I also went through a divorce and became a single mom. And so it didn't take very long for me to realize that as a single mom with a baby, that just didn't work anymore. That system didn't work anymore. And so that's when I became what I call an accidental entrepreneur, where I didn't have a business plan. This isn't something that I had planned out, but I just kind of realized, you know, I have to make this work. And the system that I was currently in didn't work. Not because of the people or that they weren't supportive. The people that I worked with were really wonderful, but that was kind of the way things were. That was the deal. That's how everybody worked there. And so I found...
And I dare say that's kind of how every criminal defense attorney works, to some degree or another, you know, doing exactly what you said. In order to have the volume of cases to support the practice, you're litigating all day, you're prepping all night, and you're fitting those jail visits in when you can. So exactly. I don't think you were alone in that respect.
No, that's exactly right. And so I decided to hang a shingle, as they say, and I ended up getting a small office with two other colleagues and kind of another very typical arrangement in, you know, the small firm world or the criminal defense world, which is, you know, find an office with a couple of your friends. And that's what we did. And I had my laptop and I had a desk and it pretty much was flying by the seat of my pants. The reason why I really needed to do that at that point was because I just needed control. I needed to have flexibility. I needed to have my work hours sync up with the daycare hours. And I felt that if I was working for myself, although I would still have the pressure of being a lawyer and being a business owner, at least I wouldn't be answering directly to other people. And so it was more about, not about making it easier, but just about being in the driver's seat so that I could kind of answer to myself and work around what I needed in terms of, you know, my daughter's schedule and those sorts of things.
Now, did you continue to primarily focus on criminal defense?
I did. Criminal defense, I would say, is kind of my first love in my legal career. That is what I wanted to do, and that's what I'm really passionate about. I also added in an immigration practice area, which was not as court-based, and that ramped up very quickly. And today, in my current law firm, we have three sort of equal practice areas. We have criminal defense, immigration, and civil litigation now. But when I first hung a shingle, it was a lot of criminal defense. And, you know, it really took me a few years to learn enough about what I didn't know, what I needed to know, to build that into a successful practice. And by practice, I mean, you know, a law firm that's functioning as a business, and it's not just me running around doing everything. And so I would say it took a couple years, maybe 3 or 4 years of, you know, reading the books, listening to the podcast, doing the webinars, learning about, you know, how to hire a paralegal and how to set up some systems and how to go paperless and how to start to do a little social media marketing. And really, I took baby steps because I didn't have any of those resources before I started.
And you didn't want to replicate the same problem that you were leaving. I mean, that's why I asked him to stay with criminal defense, because, you know, it carries with it those necessary burdens of which hours you tend to work. And unless you supplemented it with something else, like immigration law, maybe civil litigation, which has a little less non-typical work hour commitments, you're going to be back in the same boat. So you relieve some of that pressure while being able to maintain a caseload that can support your development.
I did. And I also really reinvented the wheel a little bit in terms of even my criminal defense practice. And that was an evolution, but...
What do you mean reinvented the wheel? You developed some new strategies into how you process those cases, or leveraging more technology, or in general?
A little bit of both. So I think that you're exactly right. Like, what you've hit upon is kind of the traditional approach to criminal defense and to other areas in a small firm life. And frankly, that's a lot of the frustrations that I hear from colleagues, is that, you know, it has to be this way because you know, this is the court schedule and we can only go to the jail after court and our clients expect this of us and courts expect that of us. And maybe it was just kind of out of necessity, but I started to check out of some of that a little bit and sort of reinvent some boundaries that I needed. And I found it to be very effective. And I, you know, my current firm today, some of the things that we do a little uniquely is we have client-facing positions and back-of-house positions. And what that means is we have staff whose job it is to interact with clients, and then we have other staff whose job it is to do casework. We have lawyers who go to court, and then we have lawyers who do research and writing. And that is unusual in a small firm, in the small firm world, because usually it's it's a solo or it's a couple lawyers and everybody's kind of doing everything. You know, you're working up your case, you're talking to the client, you're going to jail, you're going to court, and then you're coming back to the office and preparing. So we have a larger staff. We have significant overhead for staff. But what that allows us to do is to have the front of house people totally accessible to clients, answering questions, scheduling with the courts, things like that, while the back of house is doing the legal work. And we have lawyers in court that are trying the cases. And then we have, you know, a team member back at the office who's researching, writing the briefs, preparing the trial binders, things like that. And so that allows us to kind of do it all within a workday, within a reasonable work week.
Yeah. So you can structure it. You can structure your staffing levels and their commitment to meet their or personal needs and objectives. You know, it's interesting because personal injury attorneys have had that natural division of responsibilities in their practices because that's the nature of how the case works. So you had personal injury firms, you'll have pre-litigation and then litigation. And sometimes the two don't meet. I mean, some people just do pre-litigation if they can solve the case. They hand it over to another person or another firm to litigate the matter. So they've always had that delineation of responsibilities. And I think other trial-based practices don't always follow something similar. You have. I think it's, you know, kind of really smart on your part to be able to see that division and be able to address it. Now, I'm sure the argument that people would say, as you alluded to, is that, well, you need more people, your overhead is going to be higher, your profit's going to be lower because of that. I'm not sure that's exactly true.
Well, my answer to that is when you're providing instant customer service and you're really providing excellent value, your fees can be higher.
I was going to just say that your fees can be higher and you can service more clients.
Exactly. And it's interesting what you said about personal injury lawyers, because I like to give them credit. I think personal injury lawyers are early adapters to a lot of developments in the legal field. And when I really started to, several years ago, when I really started to sort of crystallize my vision for my firm, I actually said to a colleague, I want to run my firm like personal injury lawyers run their firms, because they have good personal injury firms. They're out there. They have name recognition. Everybody in the community knows them. They can take high volume. They are efficient.
They have to be efficient.
Yeah. And that's how I want it to be. And so that is a big part of it. It's, you know, you have to start with the mindset of, you know, I'm going to do things the way that I need to, and it might be different than the three firms next door do it. And, you know, once you decide how you're going to do it, you know, communicating that and making sure that there's a balance. So, you know, there's a trade-off. I'm not just saying, you know, I leave the office at 3 o'clock, goodbye. We have systems in place to make sure that, you know, we have excellent customer service, that our work is getting done, that there's good quality. But then communicating that to clients, to colleagues, and even to courts, setting those boundaries and kind of normalizing that, you know, you don't have to be at the jail at, you know, 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning to be a diligent attorney. You don't have to be taking clients' calls at, you know, on Christmas Eve to be a diligent attorney, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that goes, you know, hand in hand with creating efficient systems so that you can still deliver what clients deserve.
Let's circle back, because you said something that I want to really focus in on before we get much further down this path. You talked about creating that vision that you had for the kind of practice that you wanted to create, to establish. And when you were going through that creative process, you spoke to a colleague, this, that, and the other. Tell us a little bit about, you know, the process of creating that vision. Did you go away for a weekend and kind of whiteboard it out? How did you go through that? Because you're a fairly new attorney at that time. I mean, a few years under your belt. To be able to kind of have that mental focus and discipline to map that out. I'm not saying you built the blueprint with 100% accurately all in one pass, but at least just tell us a little bit about the process.
Sure. So a big part of me, my personal life and my work life, is that I'm a mom, and I started my firm when my first child was an infant, and now I'm remarried. I have 3 children that I'm raising. And that really was something that I had to accommodate. And so in the very early years of my firm, you know, when you have little babies and they're in daycare, you could basically work a normal work day. You know, I have some anecdotes about, you know, a snow day and taking my kids or and that sort of thing. But for the most part, you know, when your kids are in daycare, you can work. And, you know, sort of kind of in line with when I really started to think about what's my long-term plan was when my oldest child was starting kindergarten. And as many parents know, you know, you start kindergarten and it's not 8 to 5 daycare anymore. It's 9 to 3, you know, or 8 to 3. And, you know, I really was thinking, you know, what do I need and want to be doing in my personal life? And something that's very important to me is to pick my kids up from school. And I do that now 5 days a week. And so it was kind of like putting a puzzle piece together. I love practicing law. I want to grow my firm because I love the work that we do. And I'm proud of the work that we do. I want to make a good living because this is what I do for a living. And I also want to be a really involved parent. You know, that was everybody can define for themselves what that means. But for me, I wanted to pick them up from school, do the mom stuff. And so those were kind of the puzzle pieces that I had to put together. And in terms of what steps I took, I always loved business development and self-development materials. I think that, you know, you can get something out of anything. And so little by little, I kind of started to piece together what it would look like to have all of those things. And so, of course, when you're talking about basically doing a full-time job in a not full-time schedule, you're looking at what can I do to be more efficient? How can I delegate? What roles do I need to add to my team? And when you're looking
at... Well, initially, your team was you, yourself, and yourself, right? For me, I was a 3-person firm, me, myself. So when you started finding that structure, you had to add staff. Did you add part-time, virtual, or full-time, or a combination of all of the above?
Combination of all of the above. When I hired my first team member, I would say that was in the early days before I had a clear plan. So I kind of did the expected move and I hired a paralegal. And of course, because she was the only, you know, full-time staff member, she was doing paralegal work. She was also doing administrative work. And then we grew organically, hired an admin to do more of the administrative work so that the paralegal could do more paralegal work. And then I would say after my second or third hire is when I started to be a little bit more strategic about it. And I started leveraging virtual team members. I've worked with a former guest of yours, Get Staffed Up, and hired some virtual people that way. And so from there, once I really started being strategic about you know, what roles I wanted to add, one method that I used that was effective is to start with a virtual position and then kind of scale it up to an in-office position.
Interesting. With the same individual, or did you have transitioning individuals from virtual to the full-time in-house?
I've done both, depending on that person's, you know, personal availability or if they were close right. by. I've worked with virtual staffing companies where it was kind of a semi-temporary position. And then, you know, when the role built up, I transitioned away from that into an in-office position.
Interesting. So let's just take a pause here about Get Staffed Up. They are friends of the show. I myself, you know, my virtual assistant is provided through Get Staffed Up, and they provide offshore virtual assistants, which translates into you get a little bit bigger bang for your buck in terms of what you pay, meaning because you can provide a very good living for folks living in other places other than the U.S. and get really high quality individuals. I'm absolutely thrilled with my staffer. I suspect you feel the same way, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it was for another factor for my practice is we do have a large bilingual client. And so having people offshore was helpful, but it was really important to me to work with a company that I knew was ethical in their conversations and things like that. So it was a great solution.
Exactly. And just to continue that aside, like my virtual assistant is in Bogota, Colombia. So she provides Spanish speaking services for me. And we will have a link in the show notes about how you can contact Get Staffed Up. But just think about it. It's www.getstaffedup.com/TLE, as in Tyra, I'm sorry, as in Law Entrepreneur. And yes, that's an affiliate link. So you help support the show if you decide that's the way you want to go.
If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com.
So let's move on. So now you've built your staff up and you're starting to structure it in a way that represents your vision. Tell us then, I know you have some other things you want to share with our audience, how that experience then translated into what you currently can share with us.
Sure. So, you know, that was once I developed that vision, and I would say that my vision was I want to have a successful practice that serves as many people as we can. I want to have an office culture that is healthy and that supports our team members excelling personally, excelling professionally, but also having a work-life balance. And I wanted to, as the owner, I wanted to have my own work-life balance in a way that was meaningful to me. And so that was the vision. And I feel, although it's always a work in progress and businesses are always developing, I do feel that we've reached that point. And I'm very proud of the team that I have working with me. And I'm proud of our office culture. And I'm very happy that I'm able to run my firm and litigate and, you know, be the type of parent that I wanted to be, that is best for us. And so, you know, having gotten to that point, I, you know, look back at what my journey was and how zigzagged it was. And I started to hear from other colleagues, other mostly women, other working mom colleagues in the legal community. And you know, they would ask me, like, I heard you leave at 3. Is that true? Or, you know, I see you hired another attorney. How are you doing all of that? Because like we talked about a minute ago, there are definitely norms in the small firm community, definitely in criminal defense, but also in my other practice areas in immigration and civil as well. And the kind of prevailing ideas is that small firm, it's just, you know, round the clock hustle. And so I found colleagues were very curious about what we did. And because I had to learn so much and such a huge learning curve, I started to create materials to, you know, basically share, you know, how we do things, how we learn to do this and how it was effective. And that kind of became a book, became the book, Mom's a Lawyer, Start a Firm and Take Control of Your Life. And I also developed it into a digital course that's called Law Firm Launch. And these are really just straight from my own experience, very close to my heart. They're materials that I wish I had had back when I was that, you know, new mom trying to figure everything out and trying to make it work.
I, you know, it's really interesting that you, the process of how this came about, because I'm surmising here that you first started off by documenting the systems that help you run your practice. And then that you just kept building on that. And am I right? And then, you know, some of the other supporting ideas that underpin the structure of your firm, you got those down on paper, and that provided the skeleton for your book.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. And there are a lot of fundamental things as well. I would describe the book as a beginner's guide to starting a law firm. You know, there are a lot of our colleagues have created really helpful materials for scaling law firms and, you know, growing from 6 figures to 7 figures and things like that. But what I found was that the women, the lawyers that were reaching out to me, they didn't know where to start. And so.
Exactly. A lot of the coaching programs, I agree, they're really geared towards making your law firm, you know, bigger and it starting from a place that you may not be. And so that's part of the reason why I think this podcast has been as successful as it has, because there's a need for that. How do I get from 0 to 60?
Exactly. You
know, 60 to 100 miles an hour is something, is a different challenge. 0 to 60 is the one I'm facing right now. How do I do all of this stuff when I have 0 clients?
That's exactly right. And, you know, the other factor for specifically for moms or parents of young children is, you know, not only do I not, I'm not going from, you know, 6 figures to 7 figures, I'm going from 0 to 60, but also I have limited time. And so kind of the old way of, you know, just, you know, roll out a cot in the office and, you know, take the 3 a.m. phone calls and things like that, that can be very daunting and, you know, deter people from starting a firm. And so the folks that I'm speaking to really in these materials fall into a couple categories. It could be a lawyer who's working in a traditional job and it's not working for them and they just don't see an alternative. It could be moms who have left their legal careers because of family pressures, but they want to go back in a way that works. I don't know if you saw, Neil, the 2021 data from the ABA study, which in part looks at satisfaction levels and representation among attorneys. Up to one third of women leave their legal careers in their 30s and 40s. And the number one reason cited for that is family and home pressure. And so if 30% of our women colleagues are leaving their legal careers at the height of their career because of family pressures, you know, that's a pain point. And so that's really who I had in mind when I created these materials, is people who, they want to practice law, they love their jobs, they love the field, but the traditional approach isn't working. And for me, the solution was entrepreneurship and taking control.
Well, I'm going to speak to my male colleagues here who are listening. If you don't understand the power that moms have, you got your eyes closed. Because, first off, mom's job ain't an easy one. It's damn difficult. And if a woman can handle what's involved in being a mother, and she can handle your law practice. So it's an untapped resource. I don't understand those firms who say, not sure that I want to hire her because this mom and I hire, she's going to, you know, they don't say this out loud, but they're thinking it. They sometimes say it out loud in private. As soon as I hire her, she's still going to be off on maternity leave. And, you know, we just need somebody consistent, or the ones who say, I don't want to have to see her run out of the office, you know, on a daily basis. I don't know why we don't recognize that that is what needs to be done and tap into it. Why aren't more firms hiring moms where they live? Let them work from home on a part-time basis. It's a resource there that's just waiting to be used.
And you really hit the nail on the head, which is that I hope that we see change across the legal field and by employers. When I was, you know, finalizing the book in particular, I went back and forth on, you know, am I really directing this just to women? Am I really directing this just to moms? Shouldn't it apply to everybody?
Yeah.
And what I landed on is that, yes, it should apply to everybody. And I hope that, you know, that employers and that colleagues apply this, you know, to across the board. However, I think that, you know, because I was coming from my own experience and my own needs, I felt most comfortable, you know, speaking to what I know.
Right.
And I also think that, at least at the moment, and this hopefully will change, but at the moment, what the numbers show is that, you know, women consider this to be a problem more than men do. And so I felt that one is, let's us solve this, and then we can show, you know, basically show everybody else how it's done.
Well, you guys are going to take over the world anyway. You know, in an ironic turn of events, I think the pandemic is responsible for at least creating some momentum towards that solution, because, you know, because everybody had to go virtual, now we have lots of virtual law firms. That's the flavor of the month, virtualizing your law firm. Whereas before the pandemic, there were very few law firms that accommodated virtual remote employees. And so that now just opened that door a little more. If we would just take that one step further and say, if you can have a virtual remote, you know, employee in your law firm, tap into the mom market, because, you know, they get stuff done. They're organized, you know, they're focused, they're driven, and they know how to deliver. So I just wish we tap into that market more and recognize that it opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also there, and I think this is starting to change a little bit, but, you know, kind of the traditional legal community is maybe realizing that there is a different way to do things, that, you know, we can get a lot accomplished between, you know, 9 and 3, and we don't have to have 7 p.m. meetings. But I feel that, you know, part of what I hope to do is normalize that a little bit as well, and make that, you know, kind of force that to be a little bit more accepted.
You know, we've had a number of women-based law firm owners on the program here. And a lot of them, frankly, came from the same situation that you did. You know, they had to create their law firm as a result of having children and defining their practice the way that, would work within the mindset. You know what we haven't had? And I haven't heard, maybe, they may be out there, I don't know, but I haven't heard of a law firm owned by a guy that recognizes that, or that that says, I want to make a firm that's accessible to all parents, not just women, but all parents, and, you know, tap into that market. Stay-at-home dads who are raising families but still want to practice law. I mean, maybe they're out there. Let me know if you are. I'd love to talk to you.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. All right, so let's get off the soapbox there, because the air is getting rarefied up here. So you get the stuff together, you got the idea for the book, you put the book together. Now, you know me, I'm a tech geek. I want to know, physically, technologically wise, how'd you put the book together?
So I, low tech, I did it a low tech way. I just sat down and started writing, and it really flowed easily. I wrote it. I woke up at 4 a.m. and I would write for about 2 hours before kind of my normal day started. And
I mean, about moms getting stuff done.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a morning person, but that's kind of what time I need to wake up if I want to be the only person in my house awake. Yeah. I still have one little one. So, yeah, so I wrote it out in a really just in a way that came naturally, in a step-by-step that felt natural. You know, if somebody is using this as a guide to start a law firm. And once I had finished, I sort of went back and did some editing and restructuring. And I also did a fair bit of research on, you know, making sure, am I really speaking to the real problem and not just relying on my own experience? And I looked at Department of Labor statistics and the American Bar Association statistics on women in the workplace. And what I found really was very validating, that, you know, my experience was common. And yeah. So I put all that together in a manuscript, and then I submitted it. I just, you know, hit send and sent it along. I worked with Scribe Media to publish it, and they've been wonderful through the whole editing process. And, you know, we went back and forth with several rounds of edits until everybody was happy with it. And it was a really fun process. It was something that, you know, even though I, you know, as a trial lawyer, I do public speaking all the time and I do a lot of writing. This was a little different. You know, even though it's a business book, it still felt like a little bit more of a personal project than working on a case. And, you know, rather than just speaking for someone else like I do as a lawyer, I was speaking to my own experience. But it was a really enjoyable experience, and I'm really happy with the final product.
Well, you're in really good company with the Scribe Media. I mean, they're top notch. They're the publishers for one of my good friends, Joey Coleman, Never Lose a Customer Again, who was a guest on the program. That was the first I think I heard of Scribe. So well done there. So now then, tell me then how that translated into a digital course.
Sure. So I wanted the book to be really, just really a useful guide. It's not specific to practice area. And so I myself have 3 different practice areas, and I have some experience in other areas. So the book is really applicable to any law firm, any practice. And I use examples from different practice areas to show how, you know, different approaches can be applied to different areas. And I felt like there was some more personal a more personal touch that I could achieve through a digital course. And so the book is a guide. The course is a guide and also a lot of motivation and inspiration dealing with kind of starting from that mindset. You know, is this possible? Is this even a thing that people do? And sort of reworking the mindset around what a law practice needs to look like, what a lawyer should be doing, how a lawyer's lifestyle needs to be. And then kind of, you know, once we kind of adjust our mindset, you know, how can I get a firm off the ground? And so the course is designed to help people start a law firm from scratch in 90 days or less. So I have checklists, you know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. What are the most important things that you need to do to open your doors? And so the product is called Law Firm Launch. And so it's really, again, like we said, going from 0 to 60. So if you're in a traditional law firm job for a firm or a corporation or a government office, if you are a law student and an ambitious law student, or if you are a non-practicing lawyer who stepped away from the field and want to go back, anybody in any of those categories can get a law firm opened in 90 days or less. And what I've kind of developed is really starting from the ground up, which is basically the opposite of how I did it, which was you find an office and then figure everything out. You know, doing a little bit of legwork, of vision, of strategy in the beginning, you know, and then it's kind of off to the races.
In what format? Is it video-based or curriculum-based? Or
it's self-paced. So there's video, audio, and some documents, templates, things like that. Okay. Exercises, both templates that can be used in a practice and also exercises to develop your own framework and your own vision. The meat of the information is via audio, and I did that intentionally. I did that intentionally because I really wanted this to be something that was very accessible to working moms.
Right. They can always sit down and watch an hour-long video.
Exactly. And, you know, I've had the privilege over the past few years to do different retreats and masterminds and conferences, and those are all wonderful, and I recommend them. And I actually talk about some of the programs that I've done, resources that I've used that have been helpful. But, you know, there's also, I think, an immediate need of, you know, what can I do, you know, during my lunch break, or what can I listen to during my commute? And so I tried to be very mindful of that, making it as accessible and useful as possible.
Well, I think you're brilliant. I think it's well planned, well thought out, and I think there's a lot of upside to all of this. The book was published just last week, right? It was released last week. Great. So let's remind our audience, the book is called what again?
It's Mom's a Lawyer.
Mom's a Lawyer. I can't read my own writing.
Mom's a Lawyer. Start a firm and take control of your life. And it's available on Amazon.
And the course is called Law Firm Launch. And we'll have links for all of those, for both of those items in our show notes. But Miriam, tell our audience, if there's another way they want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to do so?
Sure. Well, my website is momsalawyer.com. I'm happy to talk over email, hello@momsalawyer.com. And probably the best way is to reach out over social media. I'm on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, Facebook, and the handle is @momsalawyer.
You're not hard to find.
Nope. I tried to be
terrific.
Assistant. And my firm, I still run my firm, and we're Arrington Law in Richmond, Virginia.
Great. Well, listen, thanks, one, for being a longtime listener to the program, and two, for making it here as a guest on the program on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really a pleasure.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before,
Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.